I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. The Emoluments Clause is a rarely talked about section of the U.S. Constitution that was written to prevent foreign governments from corrupting government officials. It was tested in a New York courtroom last week when a judge heard arguments from a government watchdog group called CREW and other plaintiffs. They claim that President Trump is violating the provision because of his business holdings in the Trump Organization that owns a hotel near the White House, a popular place for foreign leaders to stay and dine. The Justice Department asked the judge to dismiss the case because the plaintiffs don't have standing. Well, we asked Dahlia Lithwick to join us. She writes about the courts and the law for Slate. She hosts the podcast Amicus, and her article about the suit had this very catchy headline: would $1 million in hot dogs violate the emoluments clause? Dahlia Lithwick, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Hi there, Marty. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And before we get to the hot dogs, let me just read Article 1, Section 9, Clause 8, so that we're all on the same page here. It says, no title of nobility shall be granted by the United States, and no person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of the Congress, accept any present emolument, office, or title of any kind, whatever, from any king, prince, or foreign state. What were the founders afraid of?
I think that the founders were afraid, and I should be really clear, there are actually three emoluments sections in the Constitution. So the framers were really worried about this. And I think what they were worried about in this one, Article 1, Section 9, is this, what we think of as the Foreign Emoluments Clause, is that foreign leaders would be able to have undue influence over officers in the United States government, that they would give lavish gifts, and that there would be, you know, and they came out of this process where they had seen this happening in Europe, that they would be compromised as leaders and not put the interests of Americans first, but would instead be kind of doing side deals with foreign leaders. And so I think that, again, because it appears three different times in the Constitution, it's clear that the framers really wanted the officers of the United States to first and foremost put the interests of the citizenry first.
Has this ever been litigated before?
No, it has not. It has not. And it's partly because it's very vague and it's sort of archaic. Partly it hasn't been litigated because presidents have been at pains and other leaders to divest themselves so that in order to not have the appearance that they were in the pockets of foreign leaders, they were very careful. So the most recent example we have is Barack Obama, very anxious about taking Nobel Peace Prize money, and so had his ethics office do this elaborate, worked up, is this an emolument or not, and ended up donating it. But, you know, Jimmy Carter divested himself of his peanut farm. Definitely leaders have been at pains to not get themselves into situations where we need to litigate it in the first instance.
So what is CREW? And there were some plaintiffs with CREW. What are they arguing?
So CREW is a good government group, a left-leaning good government group, and they actually filed suit 3 days into the Trump administration, and then they added these other plaintiffs later on. But in effect, their argument is the president, you know, hasn't shown us his tax returns. We don't know his involvements from foreign governments. The Congress has declined to act, right? There's a check built into the Emoluments Clause that says Congress can give permission for the president to accept emoluments, and Congress hasn't acted. Therefore, we have a cause of action. We can bring a lawsuit. And there was a real question when they brought this suit whether they had what's called legal standing. And right. So then they brought in two other entities to say, look, these are actual hotels and restaurant groups in D.C. who are losing business because foreign governments, we know this because they tell us this, come, they stay at the Trump Hotel, they hang out at the bar, they want to curry favor, and other entities in D.C. are losing business. And so the suit is essentially saying if Donald Trump hasn't divested and he is profiting off foreign governments making donations to his hotels and his other business entities, we think, what's called standing to come into court and sue.
And what did the judge say in response to that argument?
Well, the judge had a real problem with standing. I think the judge said, you know, there are two different issues that the judge was struggling with when he questioned the CREW lawyer. One was, I'm not entirely sure that these folks have standing because every restaurant, every hotel is somewhat damaged by Donald Trump's Trump Hotel in D.C., but why does your client have a particularized injury? And also, and I think this was something the judge was really anxious about, he said this is a political question. We have a rule. The president is supposed to abide by it. Congress has a check. Congress has chosen not to act. Why are the courts getting involved? And he was very concerned about the proposition that he, as a district court judge in Manhattan, is going to have to micromanage Donald Trump's financial affairs. That doesn't seem to him to be what courts do.
Is he saying that this is really something that Congress should deal with?
It is. I mean, it was framed, I think the Justice Department's brief just said this is what's called a political question. This is not justiciable. This is not a matter for courts to get involved in. This is between the president and the Congress. And the judge actually characterized it as a street fight. And he said, I'm not sure I want to be in a street fight. That's not the province of this court.
Now, it's the Justice Department that argued against Crewe, not a Trump lawyer. Dahlia, why is that?
Well, the Justice Department has been sort of making this institutional argument that they, you know, represent the office of the president, and the Justice Department therefore files the brief. This is not a matter of Trump's personal business affairs with his personal lawyer. This is the office of the executive branch, and they are, they claim, making a separation of powers argument, again, about the courts not meddling in an affair that is essentially a political problem. And so as a structural matter, it becomes incumbent on the Justice Department to argue it. I will say the Justice Department also has offered a definition of emoluments that is so kind of crabbed and narrow that it would be almost impossible for the president to be on the hook for anything under their definition of what an emolument is.
Is there any way to summarize that on the air?
Well, I think it goes back to the hot dogs. I mean, I think that the real feeling was, and this is, you know, as I said at the beginning, we don't have a lot of doctrine about what an emolument is. You know, the presidents up till this point have been very careful not to have this litigated. But the argument that they are saying is essentially it needs to be a bribe. It's not enough for a foreign government to give Donald Trump a bunch of business or to give him gifts or to give him Chinese trademarks. He has to do something in exchange. So in effect, the argument is if there's no quid pro quo, this is not an emolument. And that's how we got into the crazy hot dog hypothetical last week.
What was the response to the hot dog hypothetical?
Well,
to use your words.
The Justice Department, the attorney for the Justice Department just kept insisting if somebody from a foreign entity gives the president gifts and he does nothing in exchange, it's just a gift. It's a gift. It's not a bribe. It's a gift. It's a gift. And the judge was going crazy saying, look, if you say you're going to give me $1 million, whether or not I, you know, sign this foreign contract, you have that's an emolument. And back and forth they went. Wow. And finally the judge said, okay, how about this? Let's say I am a foreign entity and I want you to sign a treaty. And I say, I'm going to give you $1 million, wink, wink, but I'm going to buy hot dogs at your hot dog stand, wink, wink, and that will be the way I pay you. Is that an emolument? And at that point, the justice lawyer said, yeah, I think so.
Okay. So at least we settled that particular question. But here's where it gets complicated. As you said, Jimmy Carter, did he sell his peanut farm or he just took his hands
off? I think
he
put it into some kind of blind trust. Right. I mean, he did whatever the Office of Government Ethics told him he had to do.
And other presidents who have money, they've put that money into a blind trust when they became president. What's interesting about Donald Trump is that he still owns the Trump Organization, as I understand it. He does not manage it, but it is managed or run by his children. Does that, I guess, give Crewe any kind of standing as you see it?
Well, I think that the argument he made before before he was sworn in is, A, when I become president, I will turn over, you know, I'll have perfect transparency, you'll see my tax returns, and everyone will know what my, you know, interests, my foreign interests are. And then he failed to do that. And then, as you may remember, he stood with a lawyer and said, actually, I don't have to do any of this. I don't even have to create a blind trust. What I'll do is give over day-to-day operational management of my business to my sons. And yes, it's true, they're going to check in with me. And yes, it's true, when I step down, all of that will accrue back to me. So ethics lawyers have said that's nothing even close to a blind trust. And his sons have said, oh, no, we talk to him every week about his business affairs. So I think that the feeling has been that this isn't even in the ballpark of what real divestment would look like. His response, interestingly, has been, look, the people knew this when they elected me, and they don't care. So it's over. And so we're in a little bit of a feedback loop where, you know, his contention is, if this was going to bother folks, they shouldn't have voted for me. The fact that they voted for me knowing I'm a successful millionaire and that there are all sorts of foreign interests that invest in my companies suggests that they don't mind.
Didn't the president, though, say that he would turn over profits from his holdings to the Treasury Department? And do we know if that happened or not?
He has said he would do that. We haven't seen that happen. And again, the Office of Government Ethics that oversees such things have suggested that's probably not adequate. But I think, you know, you bring up an important point, and that is one of the real goals of this emolument suit, and there are three actually pending emolument suits, so the one that was heard last week is only the first. But one of the real goals is to get to what lawyers call discovery, to get to that part of litigation where all this stuff needs to be turned over. And so the hearing last week wasn't a hearing on the merits. It was only a hearing to see, are we going to get kicked out of court? And the Justice Department says they should get kicked out of court. There is no standing. There is no issue. We're done. But if they can get past this initial hurdle, then they get to what's called discovery. And lawyers for Crew and these other entities get to say, now we want to see all the stuff that has been hidden from the public since before the election. And so I think one of the real end games in this suit is not necessarily to litigate this arcane constitutional question about what the emoluments clause means, but to get some real transparency so that the public can understand how Donald Trump's foreign investments inflect on his decision making.
And final question to you, Dolly, about 30 seconds. Do you think this is an issue that will end up before the U.S. Supreme Court?
You know, it's a great question. I think most folks think, Marty, that this is not going to get past standing. One of the other two suits may. But I do think very much that this is an issue that some higher court is going to have to look at and make some doctrine.
On that note, Dahlia Lithwick, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times, helping us understand the emoluments clause. No easy task.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And she writes about the courts and the law for Slate. She also hosts the podcast Amicus. And we did post her article about the emoluments clause and hot dogs on our Facebook page. We're going to take a very short break, and then we'll be talking with Beth Grossman. She wants to be district attorney of Philadelphia. Stay with us. We'll be right back.